In Search of Ourselves. This is a series of programs on human relations based on actual case histories and presented in a dramatized form by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in cooperation with the National Committee for Mental Hygiene of Canada, with commentary by the psychiatrist, Dr. J.D. M. Griffin. This series is prepared under the direction of Marjorie McKenney with scripts by Len Peterson. Today's broadcast deals with the daydreamer. What can be done to help 17-year-old Donald McCracken? He has become a daydreamer. It is serious. Donald is tall, slim, rather attractive looking. He is almost an only boy now. His older brother is away attending college, and his sister is married and living in another town. His father is an electrical engineer. He has never been very close to Donald. His mother is a former school teacher. She is very interested in seeing that Donald does well in school. She devotes much of her time to Donald. She would like to devote even more time.
Is that you, Donald?
Yes, Mom.
My, you're late getting home from school.
Yeah.
Come in here to the living room. I want you to go to the store at the corner before it closes.
Yeah, what do you want? Can't you phone and have it delivered? I've got to...
It's for supper. Donald, look at your pants and sweater.
What?
Have you been rolling on the ground?
It'll brush off.
What have you been doing?
Just a little touch rugby.
Rugby? With your heart?
Oh, we were just fooling.
Donald, I told you you weren't supposed to play with a rugby ball ever. That rheumatic fever left your...
Oh, Mom, we were just fooling. Dr. Gimble said my bit of a heart murmur wasn't serious. I can still fool around. He just said I maybe better not go out for any of the teams. But he said I was to get a bit of exercise.
But not rugby. I've told you and your father's told you.
And last winter, you wouldn't let me play any hockey or basketball.
You get enough exercise walking to school and working around the house here. I let you do some swimming this summer.
Yeah, but you were always yapping at me to come out of the water.
Donald, is that any way to talk to your mother? Here's some money. Now go to the store and get a loaf of brown bread and a tin of peas.
Yeah.
Mother knows best.
We were just throwing the ball around. My gosh.
You were doing more than that to get your clothes in such a mess.
Good night. I read in a sports magazine the other day about a guy with heart trouble that became a professional wrestler.
Donald, doesn't Mother let you do everything she possibly can? Doesn't she give you money so you can do things? Doesn't she take you with her when she goes anywhere that would interest you? Doesn't she?
Yes.
I have a little surprise for you tonight. I was able to get tickets for the piano recital at the conservatory after all. So, we can go together, you and I, Dr. Littlehale's prize pupils.
I made arrangements to go out with the gang tonight.
To fool around the streets?
No, we were going to go to Nick's place.
Dear, that Huron Street bunch are not the kind of company you should associate with.
What's wrong with them?
We've been over that before. I don't like you to associate with them.
Who can I associate with? Nobody's good enough for me, huh?
Dear, you better go to the store and get those things for supper.
Yeah, okay.
Now, Donald, you're not going to let your mother down after I went to so much trouble to get those tickets. There weren't any left. Your father won't go. You won't have me go alone, will you?
No. Okay, I'll go.
Mother's so proud to be taken out at night by her big boy.
Mrs. McCracken couldn't be proud of the marks her son made in school, though. He was inclined to slovenliness. And though he was generally well-behaved, there were times when he was impulsive and troublesome.
All right, your next assignment, Chapter 27. The class is dismissed. Donald McCracken, I'd like you to remain for a minute after class. Was it necessary for you to make all that disturbance when you spilled your ink and disrupted the whole class?
It was an accident.
Maybe it was, but all that acting up about it wasn't. And you didn't need to put that big smudge on the end of your nose.
I didn't know there was ink on my fingers, and I...
Are you satisfied with the laugh you got from the class?
I didn't do it on purpose.
All right. I didn't ask you to stay to bawl you out. I've been wondering about you lately, Donald. When you're not acting up, you're sitting there in your desk daydreaming. Half the period today, you didn't pay any attention to me. You didn't take any notes. Do you expect to pass this history class?
I don't know. I hope so.
You won't if you... Don't stand there looking out of the window. Can't you look at me?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there anything bothering you, Donald?
No.
Anything I can help you with?
No.
Aren't you interested in school?
Sure.
I remember in first year you were one of my best students. What's happened?
Nothing.
That last English essay you handed in, was that the best you could do?
I did the assignment.
That isn't what I asked you. Was that the best you could do?
Sure.
Well, if you say it is, I guess it is.
A short time later, Donald handed in an assigned essay to his form teacher that did give a clue to Donald's trouble.
My nightmare. My nightmare always has me out of work and not making a success of myself in school and at home. I always find it difficult to make friends of my enemies. I try my best, but they always attack me some way. I never seem to have a mind of my own. Other people always seem to change my ideas, even though they may be good. People always smash my dreams as I differ from them. I can't have a smooth life if I am always swayed by other people, looked on by other people in disgust because I can't do things others can do. I try and keep out of wrong, and when I do, my friends hurt my feelings. I am always thought to be dumb, and people seem to take advantage of me. I try to prove that I am smart, but I always seem to fail.
Yes, he doesn't seem to mix much with the other students. He needs a bit of a boost, some encouragement. His acting up in class is probably an attempt to curry favor with his classmates. I will have a talk with him sometime.
But the teacher never did. The occasion just never happened to arise. Donald acted up less in class and didn't draw so much attention to himself. He did daydream more, but it didn't disrupt the rest of the class. At home, there was still an occasional outburst between Donald and his father. Donald had an aggravating habit of paying no attention when his father spoke to him. Mr. McCracken was driven to threaten strong measures to get any reaction.
You're getting too big for your britches, young man.
I cleaned the garage out.
You did. Swung the broom around a couple of times in the air.
I swept it.
Oh, I'll get Tommy, the handyman, to do it and stop all this fighting. He's coming tonight to clean up the leaves in the backyard anyway.
Donald will clean out the garage. He doesn't think he has to take any responsibilities around here. He's getting away with far too much. I'm putting my foot down, even if I have to take a strap to him. He's not that old that I can't still...
Go ahead.
Don't answer back like that, young man. You just go out and clean up that garage. When I get back from my meeting tonight, I want that garage spick and span.
Donald, you shouldn't upset your father like that.
I didn't start it. I wasn't doing anything. He didn't say he wanted everything cleaned up. I swept the floor. That's all I...
Well, your father is worried about that new equipment that's being installed in the plant. You shouldn't cross him, dear. You go up to your room and get to work on your homework. I'll get Tommy to clean out the garage. He can rake the leaves tomorrow. Cleaning out the garage is... All that moving of those heavy boxes. Your father doesn't realize that's too strenuous for you. Now go and do your homework, and don't cross your father anymore, dear.
Mrs. McCracken, the peacemaker. She was relieved in the following months to see that Donald came to quarrel less and less with his father. He spent a great deal of time in his room. When his father ordered him to do anything, he was more obedient.
That other time was just a phase Donald was going through.
He no longer associated with that rough bunch from Huron Street, and he stopped fretting about not being able to play sports. He seldom stayed after school anymore, so his mother knew he wasn't playing on any teams and straining himself. He had a short spell of hanging around pool halls.
Donald, I wish you wouldn't. That's no place for you. You don't know who you might get involved with.
Yeah, okay.
His mother gave him money to go to the movies. He could go alone. There wasn't the same chance of his meeting with questionable young men and women. He began to attend the movies 2 and 3 times a week. He saw nearly every movie that came to town. He liked them all. Always he imagined that he had written the movie. It was his creation. Screenplay by Donald McCracken. None of the other people in the theater knew he was sitting there among them.
In 10 years from now, I'll be a renowned playwright, making about $500,000 a year. I'll have successful plays all over the world, but I'll stay in the middle class of people so I can see both sides of rich and poor. I'll have wealth, but not so much as to be a millionaire. I'll have a home not too large and not too small. I'll be well known as a helper of the poor, and I'll spend my money on trying to better their conditions. I'll travel all over the world and have many foreign friends. Besides writing plays, I'll produce them and direct them too. I'll work up from the bottom, I think I should, through hardships and labor, so I'll appreciate it all the more.
Donald's work at school continued to be slipshod, and despite his dreams about becoming a great playwright, his marks in composition and literature were almost his lowest. Sometimes he dreamed about becoming a famous fighter pilot in the next war, and sometimes he dreamed about being a farmer, breeding prize cattle worth $20,000 a head. But usually, he thought of himself as a world-famous screen playwright from Hollywood.
Father, he'll have to look up to me then. He'll come and knock at my office, and I'll tell one of my secretaries to show him in. And I'll pretend not to recognize him at first.
I thought I'd come down and pay you a visit.
What do you want? I'm very busy. I can only spare a couple of minutes.
Well, I thought I'd...
Yes?
Cecil B. DeMille to see you, Mr. McCracken.
Tell him to wait. Yes, where were we? Oh, yes, you were saying...
I thought I'd come and see you. I wonder if you could help me out. I lost my job with the firm and I...
Excuse me. Yes?
Hello, Mr. McCracken. This is Laurence Olivier speaking.
Oh, yes, Sir Laurence. I want you for my next picture. Come in and see me at 10:43 tomorrow morning, and we'll discuss it and draw up a contract.
It will be an honor to appear in one of your pictures, Mr. McCracken.
Goodbye.
Donald, you will help me out of the spot I'm in, won't you?
Oh, dear. I'm sorry. I'll have to cut this interview short, but I have a very important conference coming up, Mr.
You won't help your own father?
Father? What are you... So it is. I didn't recognize you. Well, well. How are you?
I need your help. I wonder if you could spare me...
Money? Sure. How much do you want? I'm terribly busy. I'll just sign a blank check for you here, and you can fill in the amount.
Oh, thank you very much.
What say we make arrangements to meet for lunch?
That would be very nice.
Here's the check. Make it out for whatever you want. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Thank you, Donald.
Oh, not at all, not at all.
But finally, in real life, or rather, in a combination of real life and fantasy, Donald played out a drama with his father that had serious consequences.
McCracken, saw your old man driving around some pretty little dame in his car last night when I was coming home from delivering my papers. Boy, she was all right. Blonde, young. Maybe your old man's cheating on your old lady.
Aw, Shorty. Your old man might, but mine wouldn't.
But a week later, Donald was downtown, and he'd just parked his bicycle against a telephone pole when he saw his father getting into a car with a pretty and young blonde woman. He ducked behind another car.
Oh, Mr. McCracken, you're so funny. I don't believe it.
Well, I'll show you sometime.
Don't you dare.
I sure will.
So he is going out with a just like Shorty said. Yeah, that's just like him. That's just like him. I'll fix him. I'll show him. And he's been bossing me around, telling me what to do, telling me what's right, making me do things. Yeah, I'll fix him.
Donald jumped on his bicycle. He was not sure what his course of action was going to be. All he knew, he was going to get back at his father some way. But Donald had long ago lost the ability to face an issue. He couldn't go to his father and...
I'll run away. I'll show him.
He turned and pedaled westward, away from home. He would get onto the highway.
I will never go home now. He'll never hear of me again. I'll disappear. And they won't hear of me for 10 years. Not until I become famous and...
Oh dear, all these years we've waited for word of Donald. He disappeared right off the face of the earth. Somehow I feel responsible. It was my fault. He must have heard of my... Somehow he must have.
Here's the paper, dear. It just came. Do you want it? I wish that new boy wouldn't fold it up that way and throw it. One of these days, he's going to break a window.
Yes, give me the paper. Let's see what's...
They don't know the headlines about me and how I've become famous as a playwright with a... Ah!
Donald McCracken was knocked down by a heavy coal truck. He didn't see the red traffic light against himself or the truck cutting across the intersection as he dreamed about his revenge and triumph over his father. He had no justification for suspecting his father of any wrong. Mr. McCracken, out of politeness, was merely giving a lift to a woman who worked in his office and lived out his way. Donald suffered abrasions, bruises, and a broken leg. His daydreaming had become a serious danger. Here ends our story about the daydreamer, to be followed now by the commentary of Dr. J.D. M. Griffin, psychiatrist of the National Committee for Mental Hygiene of Canada. Dr. Griffin.
Yes, daydreaming, reverie, emotional preoccupation, call it what you like, can be dangerous. In the case of Donald, which has just been presented, the daydreaming led to a bad accident and to physical disaster. More often, the damage is mental and emotional. We parents don't usually get too alarmed when our children indulge in a little daydreaming. As long as they seem to be doing all right in school and staying out of trouble, we are inclined to be amused rather than disturbed. But from a psychiatrist's point of view, daydreaming such as Donald's is serious. It is a sign of his retreat from reality. He found that real life was painful, uncomfortable, and embarrassing. So he closed his mind to the harsh and unpleasant facts of his life as it is, and focused his attention on the pleasant world of make-believe. In this way, Donald was able to feel less anxious and a great deal more comfortable. This is quite a usual mental trick. Don't we all enjoy a spot of daydreaming now and then? Sometimes we prefer to take our daydreams ready-made through the movies, the radio, or even the novel. These are the escapist or diversional pastimes we often hear about, and of course they do serve a useful purpose. But sometimes our escapes into fantasy become so pleasant that they are increasingly preferred to action in real life. This is a danger sign. At that point, our mental health may be in jeopardy. Let us take a further look at Donald's case. He is a real boy, and he had daydreams like the ones we have heard about. Was life presenting him with some pretty painful situations? What about his heart condition? Well, physical disability is often hard for a growing boy to accept. And naturally, his mother is concerned and wants to protect him. But Donald wants to play ball and other active games, and he finds that at every step his mother is warning him and curbing his natural liveliness. How did Donald react? At first, he tried to argue with his mother and persuade her to let him have his way. When this didn't work, he began to have dreams. Do you remember his first dream? His nightmare? Do you remember how he was always meeting failure? "I'm not a success," he says. "I try my best, but I never seem to have a mind of my own. Others always seem to change my ideas and smash my dreams." Nightmares and night dreams often seem to reveal underlying difficulties even better than daydreams. Doesn't this nightmare indicate how hard Donald is trying to overcome this frustration? And doesn't it show how, in spite of his best efforts, he believes that other people always interfere and keep him from success? It's never his fault. It's always other people who somehow influence him and make his life difficult and unhappy. Gradually, we see how his daytime, waking fantasies are solving the problem so clearly stated in his nightmare. In his daydreams, he is always superior and successful, and always real life brings him down with a thud. Finally, in a fury of rage and disappointment, he runs away. He combines both physical running away with his mental and emotional retreat. Dr. Hinks suggested that all of us have opportunities for helping people with emotional difficulties, such as Donald and his family. Perhaps some of us have friends or relatives who are just like Donald. What can we do? Well, first, of course, I think we must try to understand why situations like this develop. I guess partly the reason lies in the kind of family and home life that Donald has had, and partly the reason lies in Donald himself. For instance, what about his father and mother? I know it's easy to be critical, but don't you think that Mr. McCracken was pretty harsh with Donald sometimes? I found myself thinking how tough it would be to be in Donald's shoes, how difficult to feel friendly and loving toward Dad. On the other hand, I can understand how Dad could feel annoyed and impatient with Donald. Sometimes it does seem that the only way to handle situations like this is to take a firm stand. But if Father realized, as you and I do now, the feelings that lay behind Donald's behavior, don't you think he would understand? If he could have put his arm around his son and said to him, "I know something is bothering you, son, and I want to understand and help," don't you think that would have been better? Then, of course, Mother. Well, naturally, she was worried and concerned about Donald's health, maybe too much so. She became protective and, in her own way, pretty domineering, don't you think? No real teamwork between Donald and either parent. What about the teacher? Could she have been more helpful? Mr. Graham told us how one school system was organized to help pupils with emotional problems. He told of the value of holding conferences with teachers and mental health experts, where problems of this kind could be studied and helpful suggestions put into action. In Donald's case, for instance, the value of activities outside of school in which Donald could become interested and successful should be considered, hobbies of various kinds that would bring him gradually into more healthy contact with other people. Most of what I have said tonight has to do with attitudes toward Donald, or things to do with him. How about a thought or two about helping Donald to help himself? Too often, we parents and teachers think in terms of changing the environment and moving the child about, when actually the most effective approach is to help the child think about his problems and work out a plan for himself. To sum up, then, I think young people with a problem like Donald's need first the understanding and sympathetic support of their own parents. Second, the help and guidance of other adults, such as their teachers. And finally, they need to be helped to feel that they themselves have a job to do about themselves.
This has been Problem Number 9, The Daydreamer, another in the series of dramatized programs on human relations presented by the CBC in cooperation with the National Committee for Mental Hygiene of Canada, with commentary by the psychiatrist Dr. J.D. M. Griffin. This is the Dominion Network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.